Hey, Celeste, remember this?
I would tell members of my family, and I have. I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places now. It's not that it's going to Mexico. It's you're in a confined aircraft. When one person sneezes, it goes all the way through the aircraft. That's me.
Joe Biden.
Who can forget?
He tells it like it is.
Long ago, it seems like a long time ago, maybe in a galaxy far, far away. Really, it was March of 2009. We were just getting to know the term swine flu after there were some mysterious flu-like cases down in Mexico. By mid-June, the World Health Organization declared the first flu pandemic in more than four decades. Here we are 9 months later, and only seven states are currently reporting widespread flu activity. Cases continue to decline nationwide. The H1N1 crisis seems to have been averted, or maybe it was never a crisis in the first place. We've got a couple of people here to talk about it. Joan Nichols is Associate Director for Research at the Galveston National Laboratory. Welcome.
Good morning.
And Dr. D.A. Henderson is a professor of medicine and public health at the University of Pittsburgh and author of Smallpox, Death of a Disease. Dr. Henderson, thanks for coming on The Takeaway.
Very happy to be here.
I'll start with you, Joan Nichols. It does seem that we managed to avert this H1N1 catastrophe. Was that because we were smart or lucky?
We were both smart and lucky. At first, mostly lucky, because we discovered the virus fairly quickly, and Mexico did its best initially, once the virus was identified, to slow spread and give us some time to educate people and develop good hygiene practices and things like that. So it's a little bit of both.
And D.A. Henderson, you're a physician. You're also a public health expert, and you paint a slightly less rosy picture about how we reacted to this. Why so?
Well, I think the CDC and manufacturers did what they could in trying to make a vaccine, but this proved to be very difficult. And I think the difficulty, however, that we had was in communicating with the public on a couple of occasions and many occasions about the likelihood of what the epidemic was going to be like and when vaccine would be available. So there's a lot of misleading kinds of information which I think confused the public.
So you're saying that the way that communication went on wasn't great, and maybe there was problems with the vaccine distribution, but do you think the decisions that were made were pretty sound?
Well, the decisions that were made were primarily related to trying to produce vaccine as rapidly as possible, and I think the decisions were made well. We just don't have a very good vaccine that we could put together quickly, and that's something that has to be corrected.
Do you think, D.A. Henderson, that it's a problem that we rely on private industry to create these vaccines when people's lives are hanging in the balance?
Well, I think this is technology that's involved, and where government and industry have to work closely together. We need a number of developments that to produce a vaccine, which can be given once and will protect at least for 3 or 4 years, so that we don't have this frantic problem of identifying a new virus and then just having months to produce large quantities of it. This has failed before in 1957 when we tried to put it together. We failed again here.
Well, it's hard to plan for a pandemic virus, and it's hard to plan for a pandemic vaccine because of the way influenza changes. We're always going to have that problem that we're going to be behind in terms of development of the vaccine to fit the virus that's circulating, if it fits the type for a pandemic type, and it's a new virus that nobody has immunity to. Now, severity is a different story. Pandemic just means the potential to spread across the world because we do not have immunity in our population. So it's hard to plan for a new virus.
Joan Nichols, Associate Director for Research, Galveston National Laboratory. What is this that we hear about a possible third wave?
Well, what's happened in the past, generally when a new virus enters our population, a new influenza virus, as we see an initial seeding of the population, usually it's a little slower than we saw with this virus, but then we move faster than we have in the past in terms of moving from place to place globally. So with the fact that we seeded this virus out in our population fairly quickly, it spread through the initial first groups of people. We got some information about, good information about good hygiene practices, some social distancing. We've learned how to wash our hands more. All of those things have slowed the spread of the virus. But what will probably happen as we move into a period where we're not as worried about contamination, we're not as worried about getting the virus, we're probably going to spread it through the population in a second wave. And we'll probably see more people because, again, even though we've got a vaccine program that's starting, vaccine has only hit most states recently. And so we haven't vaccinated enough of our population to protect them to limit the spread as it moves through again. And so that's the second wave theory that happens.
Let me pose a similar question to you, D.A. Henderson. Do you feel like what we've learned from this round of H1N1 prepares us for what's ahead? Because there's always something new sort of coming down the road. And my question is, are we going to be able to handle it?
Well, I think we're going to be better prepared. There are a number of actions being taken in terms of vaccine production improvements and also a lot of work being done to develop vaccines which have a broader a protective range. What we did not learn very well is that we had a previous experience. In 1957, we had a pandemic which has behaved almost like this epidemic in time and in all characteristics virtually. And at that time, we did have a winter epidemic. It went from January to March, which is the usual time when it seems best and easiest for influenza to occur. However, there's a difference this year, and that is that we've discovered that many fewer cases than were expected are occurring in people beyond 65 years of age.
Yeah.
And that's the very dangerous time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, D.A. Henderson, professor of medicine and public health, University of Pittsburgh, author of Smallpox, Death and Disease, thank you. And also Joan Nichols, associate director for research at the Galveston National Laboratory.
Coming up, how you can get a fresh start on your career, even if you're out of work now. That's in a few minutes.